good evening, truth seekers. Hello, right wingers. Welcome to tonight's program. What's going on over in Alabama and Mississippi? Oh, that's right. They're having primaries. Do you know that 60, I think it's true, this number is true in both states, 66% of the citizenry of these two states do not accept science? They do not believe in evolution. And if you don't believe in evolution, then you have to reject about 10 more or less parallel disciplines, scientific disciplines. You have to just reject them. And, of course, if you don't believe in evolution, then why do you get a flu shot every year? It's, never mind. They wouldn't understand. I was watching Tweety Bird. What's his name? Chris Matthews on MSNBC this afternoon. And former Democratic Senator John Breaux, who was very conservative, and former Mississippi Senator, Republican, Trent Lott, we're all with Chris Matthews. I have to say, it was a very funny interview. Unintended funny. The way Matthews was dingling both of these guys along with their inability to say whether or not they would vote for, you know, one of these three clowns that are running in Mississippi and Alabama tonight. And how the people of Mississippi and Alabama, something like 46% of them, we had the figure the other night, believe that Barack Obama is a Muslim. Just, my God, I've never seen anything like this. Have you, truth seekers? Have you ever seen it? The absolute brain dead being led by these clowns like Orly Tates and Rush Limbaugh and the rest of these freaks who are just leading these folks around, taking them into dead end after dead end. It's astonishing. Astonishing. This hour is being sponsored by Stephen from Burbank. Matter of fact, the entire night is. Thank you, Stephen. Stephen from Burbank. The message for this hour: we're born, we suffer, and then we die. Ouch! If we're lucky, in between these times, we get a few good belly laughs. Laughter, love, and justice all derive from truth and conscience. That's what it's all about, Charlie Brown. Okay. Now, I have to tell you, you stick around because Stephen from Burbank's messages get even more interesting as the night progresses here. Anyway, thanks, Stephen. Appreciate it. 66% of people in Alabama and Mississippi do not accept science. How do you, how, I, honest to God, how do people live like that? How do they say, well, I spent some time in Lafayette, Louisiana. And it wasn't too much to do down there. So I went to the library to check out the book. It was the Bible. I mean, how do people in the South, oh my God, how do they do it? How do they maintain this ignorance and actually feed themselves, put their support hose on in the morning, give themselves an enema, whatever they do down here. And I should know, I live here, but I don't associate with this kind of madness. The people I know, actually, most of the people I know, except my wife, are all transplanted Yankees from different parts. Kathy's from here. Well, she's only second generation here. First generation, we're from where? Indiana? Where are they from? Missouri? Yeah. Missouri, okay. So the people that we call friends, we have some southern-born friends, but they are not... They don't reject science. They don't accept the mad ramblings of these right-wing talk show hosts. They may go to church, but they look at church as something that is very personal, private, for their own spirituality. They keep the religions, as Jesus told them to do, to themselves. if they're a Christian. The Jewish friends we have, they never come over and start, have you accepted Judaism? You know, it never happens. The Muslim friends we have, assalamu alaikum. That's about it. Oh, hey, how are you too? I don't know how people can live in the kind of ignorance that rejects science. How do you do that? And they're voting tonight, today. They're all crawling to the voting places with their little photo IDs clutched between their teeth. I want to vote. I'm going to vote for Rick Santorum. I'm going to vote for Newt Gingrich. I'm going to vote for the Mormon. I mean, this is true madness. Now, granted, it's only the primary season, and the Republican base is rabid. They're like, I don't know, they're like southern hound dogs have been bit by a rabid possum. And they run around baying at the moon and baying at the sun and got to stop the women from getting hold of them little old pills. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Science. I got my Bible. I don't have to believe no science. It's right here. Everything I need to know is right here. So anyway, as the night progresses, we will occasionally reference these races toward stupidity in Alabama and Mississippi. Alabama, Mississippi. And let you know how the mouth breathers are doing over there. Good Lord. I wonder if Newt's lies and deception about $2.50 a gallon gasoline is going to get him any traction in either state. Right? Newt Gingrich. I'm going to give you $2.50 a gallon gasoline. That's what I'm going to do. You know, the reason we don't have $2.50 a gallon gasoline is because of because of the president. Well, soon to be ex-president. If he had any kind of a program or a plan, we'd have $2.50 gasoline. You know, it's around $4 now, isn't it? Isn't it, Callista? Beep, beep. Yes. My. Well, Michael Clare is a professor of peace and world security studies at Hampshire College and the author of a new book, The Race for What's Left, subtitled The Global Scramble for the World's Last Resources. And he just wrote a piece titled A Tough Oil World, Why 21st Century Oil Will Break the Bank and the Planet. And this was at TomDispatch.com. When we come back from the break, I'm going to share a little bit of this with you. When I read this today, I was thinking, gee, has Newt read this? Well, Newt, you know, is a genius, very brilliant man. Ask him. He's an historian. He's a college prof. Ask him. And he knows that telling the brain-dead voters over in Alabama and Mississippi that he's going to get $2.50 a gallon gasoline is madness. It's insane in the first place. Oh, never mind. I don't know why I do that. I don't know why I engage in any kind of thought process at all with these right-wing tadpoles. I just don't get it. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Enough. ready for Radical Talk Radio? It's Mike Malloy.
All right. 21 past the hour. Michael Clare, professor of World Security Studies at Hampshire College. He writes, oil prices are now higher than they have ever been, except for a few frenzied moments before the global economic meltdown of 2008. Many immediate factors are contributing to the surge, including Iran's threats to block oil shipping in the Persian Gulf, fears of a new Middle Eastern war, and turmoil in energy-rich Nigeria. Some of these pressures could ease in the months ahead, providing temporary relief at the gas pump, but the principal cause of higher prices, a fundamental shift in the structure of the oil industry, cannot be reversed. And so oil prices are destined to remain high for a long time to come. In energy terms, Claire writes, we are now entering a world whose grim nature has yet to be fully grasped. This pivotal shift has been brought about by the disappearance of relatively accessible and inexpensive petroleum, easy oil in the parlance of industry analysts. In other words, the kind of oil that powered a staggering expansion of global wealth over the past 65 years and the creation of endless car-oriented suburban communities. This oil is now nearly gone. The world still harbors large reserves of petroleum, but these are the hard-to-reach, hard-to-refine, tough oil variety. From now on, every barrel we consume will be more costly to extract, more costly to refine, and so more expensive at the gas pump. As with the Deepwater Horizon disaster, oil extraction in deep offshore areas and other extreme geographical locations will ensure ever greater environmental risks. After all, approximately 5 million gallons of oil were discharged into the Gulf of Mexico thanks to BP's negligence, causing extensive damage to marine animals and coastal habitats. Keep in mind that as catastrophic as it was, it occurred in the Gulf of Mexico, where vast cleanup forces could be mobilized, and the ecosystem's natural recovery capacity was relatively robust. The Arctic and Greenland represent a different story altogether, given their distance from established recovery capabilities and the extreme vulnerability of their ecosystems. Efforts to restore such areas in the wake of massive oil spills would cost many times the $30 to $40 billion BP is expected to pay for the Deepwater Horizon damage, and it would be far less effective. And don't forget the final cost. If all these barrels of oil and oil-like substances are truly produced from the least inviting of places on this planet, then for decades to come, we will continue to massively burn fossil fuels, creating ever more greenhouse gases as if there were no tomorrow. And here's the sad truth. If we proceed down the tough oil instead of investing as massively in alternative energies, we may foreclose any hope of averting the most catastrophic consequences of a hotter and more turbulent planet. So yes, there's oil out there, but no, it won't get cheaper, no matter how much there is. And yes, the oil companies can get it, but looked at realistically, who would want it? Ah, Newt, you ought to read something like this, old buddy, before you start opening your mouth and letting the bats fly out while you say, oh, I'm going to get you $2.50 a gallon gas. Michael Clare writing at TomDispatch.com. I just walk around these days in a constant state of eyes wide shut surprise at what passes for conservatism, what passes for logic or sense in the minds of these people that form the right wing in this country. They really have abandoned everything except their Bibles and guns. They really have. Obama called it exactly right. Only he said in times of stress or crisis. Well, no, it's in all times, all times. Science means nothing to these people. No science, nothing. Not biology, not chemistry, not, pick some, archaeology, paleontology, microbiology, none of it. None of it is real.
None of it is real. When they get their cancers and their heart attacks, they run to the nearest doctor expecting drugs to get them through, not realizing that the drugs may extend their lives for 2 or 3 months, and then they're going to croak. Rather than preventing some of this to begin with by helping to clean up the environment, all of it, the air we breathe, the water we drink, the food we eat. But no, 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 they don't need that. They have their guns, and they have their Bibles. Science? Nah, science, that's just some liberal nonsense, right? Just some liberal nonsense. Nothing is best. Take care of your health and get plenty of
rest. With what your fate is going to need. Yes, for telling all those lies.
Before the hour, this hour is being sponsored. The whole night is being sponsored by Stephen in Burbank. His message this hour: we're born, we suffer, then we die. If we're lucky, in between the time, we get a few good belly laughs. Laughter, love, and justice all derived from truth and conscience. That's what it's all about, Charlie Brown. It must be hell being a right winger. When do you ever have time to laugh?
Well, it doesn't say anything in the Bible about laughing.
Just when you think the marketers, the corporate, you know, the capitalist thugs can't do anything else that will make you just sit down, put your head in your hands, and just kind of stare at the floor, along comes this story. As you know, or maybe you don't, but the South by Southwest Technology Conference is in effect right now in Austin, Texas. It's a big deal. A lot of new things are revealed at this conference. But they've come up with a really innovative, this is something that Rush Limbaugh would come up with, homeless people as wireless transmitters. Homeless people as wireless transmitters. Have you heard about this? A marketing agency hired members of the local homeless population to walk around carrying mobile Wi-Fi devices, offering conference goers internet access in exchange for donations. The company is BBH Labs, and what they did, it's the innovation unit of the International Marketing Agency, BBH. This is the innovations unit, okay? So what they do, they outfitted 13 volunteers from a homeless shelter with their wireless devices, with business cards and T-shirts bearing their name, like, "Hi, I'm Clarence, a 4G hotspot." They were told to go to the most densely packed area of the conference, which has become a magnet, the conference, for those who want to chase the latest in technology trends. This is all in today's New York Times. The smartphone-toting social networking crowds often overwhelm cellular networks in the area. And that creates a market that BBH Labs hope to serve with what they call homeless hotspots. Homeless hotspots. It paid the homeless people $20 a day. Wow. $20 a day. Well, if it was an 8-hour day, that's $2.50 an hour. Woo! And the homeless people were also able to keep whatever customers donated in exchange for the homeless person standing there as the wireless service provider. So word got around at the conference and online that folks who were down and out or homeless were being turned into wireless towers. Word got around that this might be a little exploitative and discomfiting. You know, the fully wired crowd. Oh, my. What? Poor people? Homeless? Oh, there are homeless? They're still homeless? Oh. And what? They're being what? They walk around and they, that's awful. Could you get one over here? Because I've just lost my connection. Tim Carmody, a blogger at Wired, described the project as, quote, completely problematic. Completely problematic? And he said it sounds like something out of a darkly satirical science fiction dystopia. No, Tim, it's not something. It is people. These are people who were approached at homeless shelters. Hey, you want to make $20? Just here, carry this device. We'll clean you up a little bit. You got any deodorant? Deodorant. Oh, you don't know what it is. Okay. We'll get you some. Now, we want you to walk around. Here's your T-shirt. Hi, I'm Clarence, a 4G hotspot. Jesus God. A commentator on the BBH Labs blog offered some mock praise for the project. And then this person complained, quote, my homeless hotspot keeps wandering out of range and it's ruining all my day trades. End quote. Now, yesterday was the project's scheduled last day, and BBH Labs was scrambling to explain itself, according to the New York Times. Senil Radia, the director of innovation at BBH Labs, who oversaw the project, said the company was not taking advantage of the homeless volunteers. We paid them $20 a day, just like in India. He said the company had success with other such experiments, including one in which it gave homeless people in New York cell phones and Twitter accounts as a way to, you know, call attention to their, you know, plight. Mr. Sunil Radia said he modeled the hotspot project after the street newspapers that homeless people sell for a dollar, you see? He said, quote, we saw it as a means to raise awareness by giving homeless people a way to engage with mainstream society and talk to people. The hotspots is a way for them to tell their story. End quote. So let me get this right. This guy actually believes that these folks who have been turned into cell towers are going to walk into a densely packed conference where people can't get a cell phone connection or an internet connection, and they're going to say, hi, I'm a 4G connection. By the way, let me tell you what happened. I was a middle-class working person, and then my wife got cancer. Like, people are going to stand there and listen to it. Well, according to Sunil Radia, people would be very interested in hearing the story. Mitchell Gibbs, the director of development at Front Steps, the shelter that houses these volunteers, said he advised Mr. Radia on how best to set up the program. He said he was surprised by all the criticism, which he said had inspired what he calls an entrepreneurial spirit among the homeless participants. Mr. Gibbs said, quote, it's an employment opportunity, regardless of who is offering it. An employment opportunity. Be a 4G hotspot. Walk into a crowd and say, point to your t-shirt. Hi, I'm Fred. I'm a 4G hotspot. One volunteer who had on the t-shirt, Clarence Jones, 54, said he was originally from New Orleans and became homeless after Hurricane Katrina. This man said, quote, everyone thinks I'm getting the rough end of the stick here, but I don't feel that. I love talking to people, and it's a job, an honest day of work for an honest day's pay. $20 for the whole day. Adam Hanf, chief executive of the marketing advisory firm Hanf Project, said that even if the effort was well-intended, it seemed to turn a blind eye to that disconnect. He said, quote, there's already a sense that the internet community has become so absurdly self-involved that they don't think there's any world outside of theirs, end quote. Well, Mr. Hanf, there isn't. But I, you know, I saw this story and I thought, oh, my goodness. You're homeless. You're hungry. You live in this cockroach and lice infected crappy ass shelter here in Austin, Texas. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll turn you into a cell phone tower for a day. We'll pay $20 too. How's that, huh? You can go get yourself a bowl of minestrone or something. Ah, how about that? Maybe some clean socks? All you have to do is walk into this conference with your t-shirt on and mingle. My God. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and chat about some more interesting things from the wonderful world of right-wing crazy people who are turning homeless people into transmission towers. Huh? We'll be right back.
Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored, as the whole night is, by Stephen in Burbank. Stephen's message this hour: we're born, we suffer, and then we die. Ooh. If we're lucky, in between time, we get a few good belly laughs. Laughter, love, and justice all derived from truth and conscience. That's what it's all about, Charlie Brown. I wonder if the people in Mississippi and Alabama know that. From Kevin in Colorado Springs, Mike, assuming that these 4G hotspots work 8 hours a day, that comes out to $2.50 an hour, well below the minimum wage. And I'm betting these people were forced to work for much more than 8 hours a day. Entrepreneurial spirit? Really? Hardly more like the corporatists trying to see just how little a person will actually work for an hour. But hey,
They were, after all, helping the homeless pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Newt or Mitt would be proud. Kevin in Colorado Springs. And Prairie 2 writes, the federal minimum wage for food servers that receive tip income is $2.13 an hour. Depending on tips, being a hot spot might be a better job. God, I don't know about you people. Oh, Lord. And from Tim in L.A., Mike, I wonder if the corporation cares about the risk of cancer from the radio waves, especially 4G. It's bad enough that there are phone towers, but to carry one so close to your body, oh, well, they're homeless, probably black, and they get $20. I hate capitalism, Tim adds. From Kathy in Maine. Maine's War Against Women. Hi, Mike. This comes from the Maine front on the war against women being waged here by the rethugs who hold control of our legislature and state. Item. Despite a petition with over 5,000 signatures and continuing pressure from local advertisers, Limbaugh is still heard for 3 hours daily on AM conservative radio stations across the state. Why, of course. Rush is God. Item. William Schneider, Governor LePage's state attorney general, has threatened to bring a lawsuit against President Obama's contraception mandate in order to restrict access to birth control to Maine women. Item. Last week, rethug Congressman Lance Harbell stood up proudly on the floor of the Maine House of Representatives and argued for Maine insurance plans to stop covering pap smears. He can't see why a young man's insurance plan should cover such a procedure. And so it goes, Kathy writes, as the Republican thugs continue to assault the women of the state in lockstep with the federal Republican legislators, all no doubt taking their marching orders from the leader of the rethugs himself, and just like Rush, they have no idea what insurance is or how it works, much less anything at all about women's health care. Kathy in Maine. Well, I would put it a little bit differently, but since Hannity and the rest of these animals are trying to find equivalence between me and Rush Limbaugh, I guess I better watch my language tonight until all this blows over. Did you see where the Trump family went hunting? Did you see this? No, his sons, the young millionaire Trump boys, Eric and Donald Jr., they went to Zimbabwe where they hunted and killed a whole bunch of animals. PETA said in a statement, quote, if the young Trumps are looking for a thrill, perhaps they should consider skydiving or bungee jumping or even following in their anti-hunting father's footsteps and taking down competing businesses, not wild animals. End quote. The images are on YouTube now. They show young Eric and young Donald Jr. posing with the trophy game, dead. Let's see, they got an elephant and a croc and a kudu and a civet cat and a water book. In response to the criticism, the eldest Trump brother took to Twitter to defend their little trip to go kill animals. He said, quote, I'm a hunter. For that, I make no apologies. I can assure you it was not wasteful. The villagers were so happy for the meat, which they don't often get to eat. Jesus Christ, are you kidding me? Did he really say that? Oh, he tweeted it. You did it for the natives. You went out and killed an elephant for the natives to eat. Well, Eric and Donald Jr., I mean, you're such wonderful Caucasoids. I mean, to go on a safari and kill animals for the dark-skinned people to eat. A cat? Really? Is cat good? A civet cat? Is that good?
elephant meat. What part of the elephant do you eat that isn't, you know, kind of chewy? What part? The ears? Oh, my God. He later continued his defense, the Trump boy, referring directly to complaints that the animals he and his brother had killed, namely elephants, had shrinking populations. And he said, hey, in some parts it's overpopulated. Bottom line, without Hunter's money, there wouldn't be much left of Africa. Isn't that a wonderful Caucasoid statement? Without Hunter's money, there wouldn't be much left of Africa. Wow. This is the Malloy Program, and this hour also is sponsored by Stephen in Burbank. He's sponsoring the whole night. Stephen in Burbank, his message this hour, ethics are the substitute for when morality becomes too dangerous. Ethics are the... Oh, I get it. Okay, yeah, that's good. Ethics are the substitute when morality becomes too dangerous. Wait till you hear what Stephen says next hour. Thanks, Stephen. Santorum wins Alabama. Three-way race in Mississippi. Too close to call. Yeah! Malachi in Saskatoon sent me this. Mississippi Republicans are trying to ban liberal history in social study courses in that state. It says here, conservatives have made strong efforts in the last couple of years to rewrite textbooks and brainwash school kids with their own twisted version of history. Mississippi Republicans are the latest to attack education, and they plan to pass a bill in the legislature that would practically ban liberalism in classrooms and in textbooks. According to the Mississippi Clarion Ledger, House Bill 1384 prohibits educators from teaching what Republicans call, quote, any partisan agenda or philosophy, end quote. But if you listen to what they're saying about the bill, what it really sounds like is that conservatives want to force instructors to teach history the way they see it. The House Education Committee Chairman John Moore, Republican, says Republicans are, quote, trying to protect the history of our nation in its purest form, end quote, which would normally sound like an innocent statement until you factor in that Republicans across the country have tried to rewrite textbooks to reflect their claims about what the purest form of American history really is. According to the conservative pseudo-historians, that would be like Newt Gingrich, I guess, America was founded as a Christian state. Slavery had nothing to do with the Civil War. In fact, was a good thing for the poor blacks. The civil rights movement was a communist movement. States had the right to secede. The founding fathers were all Christian and conservative. Oh, and they claim that liberalism is inherently evil. One Republican lawmaker had this to say. She's Representative Becky Curry. Becky Curry, a Republican of Brookhaven, Mississippi. She's a committee member on the House Education Committee, and she said she was aware of problems at her daughter's school. Ms. Curry said a teacher took liberal viewpoints when discussing current events assignments, leading her, mom, to demand a conference with school authorities. And Ms. Curry told the committee, quote, no matter which side of the coin you're on, her teacher ended up going toward the liberal end. I was surprised she made it out of there still believing the way she was taught at my house. End quote. Ah, yes, the way she was taught at my house. There's no science. There's no evolution. There's no chemistry, biochemistry. There's no archaeological finds. There's no ancient history. No. Now, you want that translated. This is what Ms. Becky Curry was really saying. The teacher didn't teach the class the way I teach my kid. Sounds like what the Republicans really have a problem with is that liberalism is touched upon at school at all. If the teacher had slanted toward a conservative agenda, we probably wouldn't even be hearing about this. The problem is, this is the word of one parent who also happens to have a political bias. Who's to say that her daughter didn't just report that her teacher was presenting the civil rights movement or women's rights or the New Deal, all of which are historical events steeped in the liberal movement of the early 20th century? Maybe the teacher stated accurately that Franklin Roosevelt is one of America's great presidents. Who's to say the daughter isn't just targeting her teacher in an attempt to get the teacher fired? The fact is, this bill is about banning history from being taught. If Republicans have their way in Mississippi, and they will, slavery, women's rights, civil rights movement, the New Deal, pretty much all of early 20th century American history will be ignored or slanted to a conservative viewpoint or presented in a hateful light. I'll tell you, truly, honestly, and I would be willing to actively promote this. The South should break away from the rest of the Union. At that point, we'll take our daughter and leave, of course, probably move to Seattle, maybe someplace in Maine. Well, can't go to Maine now. They're all chock-a-block with right-wingers, too. Of course, I don't think they will be after this election. California? Maybe Oregon. No, we ought to join Bob Alexander and his wife and move to move to Vancouver. No, I think the South should secede. I really do. Because the liberals in the North and the West and up East and, you know, not that there's that many of them left, but they hate God. They elected a Muslim, put him in the White House. They don't go to church. They're a bunch of commies. They don't love the Lord. Trying to teach our kids all this scientific crapola. Some Russian and South Korean scientists have teamed up to recreate a woolly mammoth. For real, a prehistoric creature that last walked the earth some 5,000 years ago. The deal was signed today by Vasily Vasilyev of Northeastern Federal University of the Sakha Republic. And stem cell scientist Hwang Woo-suk of South Korea's Suom Biotech Research Foundation. That's according to the French news agency. The team aim is to get to work on thawed remains that they have, of course, of the extinct mammal recovered after global warming thawed Siberia's permafrost. So it's just insane. The mammoth's tissues are to be cloned by using eggs taken from a modern Indian elephant. That's according to the Korea Herald. Once the tissues have undergone a nuclear transfer process, the eggs will be implanted into the womb of a live elephant. The South Korean lost face in the international scientific community in 2005 when his breakthrough human cloning research involving embryonic stem cells was found to have been faked. He is also responsible for creating the world's first cloned dog, Snuppy. No, not Snoopy, Snuppy. In 2005, an achievement which was independently confirmed. And last year, Mr. Huang and his team unveiled 8 cloned coyotes. So they're going to clone some woolly mammoths, and then the Trump boys can shoot them and give them to the villagers to eat.
America, one flying monkey at a time. Here's Mike Malloy.
I was 21 past the hour. Terry in Flushing, New York writes, Mike, in the face of global warming, why would anyone want to clone a woolly mammoth now? I don't know, to watch it sweat. I have no idea, Terry. We live in interesting times, which means we are all cursed. You've heard of the advocacy group for victims of pedophile priests. The group is called SNAP, Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, SNAP. And now lawyers for the Roman Catholic Church and priests accused of sexual abuse in 2 Missouri cases have gone to court to compel this advocacy group to disclose more than 2 decades of emails that include correspondence with victims, lawyers, whistleblowers, witnesses, the police, prosecutors, and journalists. The priests are striking back. We've had enough. Yes, we're pedophiles. Yes, we bugger little boys. But we've had enough of these damn lawsuits. That's essentially what's being said. Now, SNAP is neither a plaintiff nor a defendant in the litigation, but the group has been subpoenaed, according to the New York Times, 5 times in recent months in Kansas City and St. Louis, and its national director, David Clohessy, was questioned by a battery of lawyers for more than 6 hours this year. A judge in Kansas City ruled that the network, SNAP, the Survivors Network, must comply because it, quote, almost certainly, end quote, had information relevant to the case. Now, SNAP and its allies say this action is part of a campaign by the church to cripple an organization that has been the most visible defender of victims and a relentless adversary for more than 2 decades. This is like going after Acorn,
but the person who went after Acorn is no longer with us. Marcy Hamilton, a law professor at Yeshiva University and an advocate for victims of clergy sex crimes, said, quote, if there is one group that the higher-ups, the bishops, would like to see silenced, it would definitely be SNAP. That's what the bishops are going after. They're trying to find a way to silence SNAP. Now, you know who William Donahue is. He's the president of the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights.
Church advocacy group in New York. And he doesn't like queers. No, not a bit.
Lawyers for the church and the priests say they cannot comment because of a judge's order, but William Donahue, he can comment.
He says, SNAP is a menace to the Catholic Church.
SNAP, a victims advocacy group, trying to protect people who have been violently sexually violated by pedophile priests. And this William Donahue says that SNAP is a menace to the Catholic Church rather than the Catholic Church being a menace to children. We live in backwards world. Now, I love what he's about to say here. Listen, Donahue said leading bishops, he knew, had resolved to fight back more aggressively against SNAP. This is what Donahue said. I love this quote.
The bishops have come together collectively. I can't give you the names, but there's a growing consensus on the part of the bishops that they had better toughen up and go out and buy some good lawyers to get tough. We don't need altar boys.
It's that last bit. We don't need altar boys. You silly goose. The fact that they needed altar boys is what got your asses in trouble to begin with. We don't need altar boys. Oh. So, Mr. Donahue said that the Catholic bishops are also rethinking their approach of paying large settlements to groups of victims. Donahue said, quote,
church has been too quick to write a check.
Now we're talking about Christianity here, right?
The church has been too busy to write a check, and I think they've realized it would be a lot less expensive in the long run if we fought them one by one.
If we fought them one by one. Who's he talking about fighting? People who, yes, are grown now, but were sexually violated by priests, and then the crimes covered up by bishops, and over decades. And Donahue is suggesting that, you know, fight these little buggered boogers one at a time. I'm never lacking for something that just blows my mind in this business, this talk radio sewer that I work in. Never. It is astonishing.
Rest on leather.
talk radio right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour, this hour is being sponsored by Stephen in Burbank, and his message, ethics are the substitute when morality becomes too dangerous. I love it. Thank you, Stephen in Burbank. It looks like Santorum has won Alabama and Mississippi? No, just Alabama. Oh, okay. But it's real close in Mississippi. Yeah, is it going to be the Christian or the Mormon? Somebody just sent me this. Here's what it says. Obama is not a foreign-born, brown-skinned, anti-war socialist who gives away health care. You're thinking of Jesus. Really? Yeah! The other night I said I didn't know too much about the DREAM Act. And surprisingly, today on The World, on public broadcasting, they have a website, theworld.org, of course. They were talking about the DREAM Act, and apparently more than 90% of Latinos support the so-called DREAM Act. Now, the bill is just sitting in Congress. The Republicans absolutely refuse to allow this to happen. It's a bill that would provide a path to citizenship for young people who were brought to the U.S. Illegally as children by their parents. Another example of Republicans only like fetuses. Little clusters of cells. Once it becomes a child, they want nothing to do with it. Nothing. And since Democrats favor this bill and Republicans, don't want anything to do with it, because Republicans, they're not interested in Latinos, at all. I don't know what they're interested in. Just continuing to eat their own bile, I guess, but they're not interested in Latinos. Democrats want to make sure that Latino voters know this. Now, according to theworld.org, passage of the DREAM Act would impact young people, and they use as an example a woman named Astrid Silva. Silva moved from Mexico to Nevada when she was 4. Now she's 23. She and her parents came here undocumented, illegally. She was an honor student in high school. It wasn't until she was applying to college that her parents told her about her illegal status. Ms. Silva said, quote, you know, trying to do SATs, they asked for a social security number, and I asked my parents, and they said, well, this is the deal. You don't have status here in the United States. She said. Ms. Silva said it was definitely a very big punch in the stomach. Just that wind taken out of you. My whole life, I'd been raised here. I feel more American than anything. And just all in one second, it was taken away because of that inability to pursue my dreams, end quote. Now, the DREAM Act would allow those who came to the U.S. as minors a chance to become citizens. They have to demonstrate what's referred to as a good moral character. I don't know what that would be. They also need to serve in the military or attend college. Newt Gingrich only wants them to serve in the military to serve the interests of corporate America. College, smallage. And Santorum, too. Santorum figures a college education for, he said it was arrogant or snobbery or something when Obama would like everyone to have some college. Huh? Republicans in Congress, as well as all the Republican presidential candidates, opposed the DREAM Act, arguing that people who entered the U.S. illegally shouldn't be rewarded. Shouldn't be rewarded. Rewarded? They shouldn't be rewarded. Little kids. Republicans hate children. They hate women. They hate the family pet. Look what Romney did with his Irish setter. Republicans hate anything living. They like dead stuff. They like colorless, bland, dead stuff. Ms. Silva said that it's time for people like her to come out of the shadows and be heard. She said, you can only expect voters to go so far without putting a face on this. You know, it's just another issue to everybody else. Even though, to me, it's my life. To somebody else, it's just a so-called dream act. They don't know what it is. When I saw this, I thought, oh, my God. She's talking to me. I didn't know what it was. Not really, the other night. Latinos know what it is, though. Fernando Romero, who's the president of the Nevada group Hispanics in Politics, said, quote, it is very important, and it's on the lips of every Latino that I know. And sometimes, as little as we may know about politics in general, we know what the Dream Act is. And Romero stresses that the Dream Act is not a general amnesty. The bill has strict parameters and would benefit an estimated 800,000 young people.
Oh, no! Only if they're a fetus. Only if they're a zygote. Only if they haven't reached 20 weeks.
Romero said, quote, and when so few people who would be the creme de la creme, children who every one of us as parents would want to have, and yet it's still being fought against by the Republican Party, that is really drawing a lot of ire. It's really causing many Latinos and immigrants in general to be against the Republican Party. Well, yeah, Mr. Romero, come on. Republicans like dead things. They like squirmy things or dead things. They don't like kids. They don't like women. They despise women because they're afraid of a woman's power. Republican political strategist Dan Burdish in Las Vegas says it's more complicated than that. He says Republican candidates don't have a blanket opposition to the Dream Act, but he says the legislation is flawed. He says, you know, you can't come in this country when you're 14 or 15, stay 15 years, and then become a citizen. There's something basically wrong with that. Tell that to the First Peoples. Tell that to indigenous Americans who watched wave after wave after wave of illegal immigrants. The Caucasoids, anyway. Come over here. Oh, Burdish, by the way, ran the Gingrich campaign in Nevada. Gingrich said he'd support a Dream Act, but only for young immigrants who join the military and go kill people. See, I'm telling you, the Republicans only like dead things. Only dead things. Arizona has voted Republican in the presidential race in 9 of the last 10 presidential elections. Clinton versus Dole was the in 96 was the one exception. But the state is now 30% Hispanic. And if the Latino community will come to the realization that Republicans only like you if you're dead, maybe as a voting bloc, they will go Democratic. You think? Now, how is this going to translate? Remember, Obama has betrayed, either directly or indirectly, Obama has betrayed an awful lot of people, including Latinos. He said, Fernando Romero says Hispanics may be disgusted with Republicans, but they're disappointed in Obama. Romero said, quote, a person that they gave all their support to promised to do it for them, and he didn't do it. At the moment, the community feels that he could have. You know what they're talking about. A way to citizenship, a way. Obama, in fact, is responsible for more deportations than Bush. Oh, enormous amounts more. Millions of undocumented people in this country have been forced to leave under the Obama administration. This is why the Republicans are such morons. They continue to tell their mouth-breathing
followers that, well, they don't tell the truth. They don't tell, Republicans don't tell the truth about anything. If they told the truth, they would say, listen, we need a national policy, yes, but Obama has deported more undocumented people from this country than any president, I think, ever. But no, why tell the truth, right? We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
When I'm tired and thick and cold, I hide in my music, forget the day, and dream of a girl.
10 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Stephen in Burbank. All 3 hours tonight. Thank you, Stephen. His message, ethics are the substitute when morality becomes too dangerous. Obama is not a foreign-born, brown-skinned, anti-war socialist who gives away health care. You're thinking of Jesus. Oh, my goodness. Oh, what communist wrote that one, right? Oh, what dirty commie wrote that, right? Oh, yes. So, if you care, if you're rational and sane, you don't. But I'll just toss it out anyway. Rick Santorum wins Mississippi. Does he win Mississippi, too? Yeah, Mississippi and Alabama. Does he win Alabama, too? Did he got both of them? Oh, you go, Rick Santorum. Yee-haw! Hot damn! Way to go, Rick! Hell, you're going to be president, boy! You keep going, Rick. Oi. The Justice Department has blocked Texas on the photo ID nonsense for voting. Civil Rights Division yesterday blocked Texas from enforcing that law requiring voters to present photo identification at the polls. The Justice Department said the law would disproportionately suppress turnout among eligible Hispanic voters. I wonder why the Justice Department... Oh, that's right. It was Bush. It was the Bush Justice Department when we got photo ID voting here. That's right. That's right. You know, I've been going to the same polling place for 11 years. Little Baptist Church over here. Yeah, little Baptist Church. And just go in and show my voter registration card. Take Molly along, and if Kathy wasn't busy, she'd come with us, or she'd take Molly, and I'd go later. You know, sometimes you break it up like that when you have to go vote and everything, and I go in there with my little white ID registration card, and everything's fine. Little old ladies that sit behind the table there would say, all right, thank you, Mr. Malloy, and check off my name and everything. And a couple years ago, that all quit. Yeah, it did. It quit. All of a sudden, little old ladies have been seeing me in there for 7-8 years. Well, Mike, you got to have a photo now. Okay, girls, here you go. I don't know why the... Well, that's right. It was Bush Justice Department. But see, here in the South, you cannot change your voting regimen without Justice Department approval. And that's because of the filthy, horrible way that the Caucasoids treated people of color, or black folk, African Americans, Latinos, whoever, just not Caucasoids, here in the South. The voter denial, the Jim Crow laws, and so on and so forth. So now, of course, there are a lot of right-wing politicians now who say, you don't need that law anymore. Yeah, you need it more than ever now. But anyway, the Justice Department said to Texas, no, Texas, nuh-uh. No, no, Texas, mm-mm. This decision follows a similar move in December, blocking a new law in South Carolina. And you got to give the Obama Justice Department credit for doing this. See, all these waves of new voting restrictions, the Republicans, the lying SOBs that they are, say, well, we're doing this in the name of combating voter fraud. Voter fraud. You know how much voter fraud there is? Let me see here. Where is it? There are 12.8 million registered voters in Texas. About 3 million are Hispanic. And where's that number of... Oh, yeah, here it is. Greg Abbott, the Texas Attorney General, said state prosecutors had won about 50 convictions related to various kinds of election fraud over the past decade. 5 a year! And there are 13 million registered voters in Texas. Oh, holy jumping Jesus Christ! It is a terrible problem, Bauer, isn't it? 5 a year out of 12 and a half million voters. Oh, my God! Well, we better get a voter ID photo thingy in place here because, you know, them old Mexicans and them old coloreds, they're just stealing everything away from us Caucasoids. Here, quick, let's get a law. 5 a year out of 13 million. Every year, 13 million voters. 5. I am a Caucasoid, and I don't understand what my brother and sister Caucasoids are so scared of. What are y'all scared of? Ethics are the substitute when morality becomes too dangerous. So saith Stephen from Burbank, our sponsor tonight. All right, quick break. We'll be right back. Stick around. The really good stuff comes next hour. The hour, and as
Stephen has sponsored the previous 2 hours. Stephen Burbank, the sponsor of this hour, too. Thank you, Stephen, so much. His message this hour, consider energy as a commodity. Consider human beings as energy. Consider surplus goods as becoming so cheap it becomes less than free. Birth control becomes a shutoff valve to the entitlement. Human rights for a bag of tomatoes? You're kidding. We will now take a few minutes and consider that. Thanks, Stephen. Stephen of Burbank, our sponsor all evening. Remember last year there was a big-ass battle in the House, U.S. House, about spending cuts. And the Republicans promised to shut down the government, which was going to lead to a bunch of defaults on our obligation. Remember all that? We tend to forget this very quickly because our crack media do not remind us over and over and over again of the double dealing and the lies and the deception of the right wing in this country. But that happened last year. Now, they came to an agreement. The Republicans and the Democratic leaders came to an agreement that set spending levels for 2013, which would put off further budget wars until after the election. Remember all that? Who said that? Just everybody, oh, hey, we did it. Of course, the Republicans went around crowing that they had won this and won that. What they had won was deep cuts in spending, which is insane in this time of fiscal collapse. But you need to be someone who reads Paul Krugman's column in the Times to understand why this is madness, or take a look at Greece to understand why this is madness. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate right-wingers? Anyway, as the New York Times in a lead editorial the other day said, now a coalition of extreme conservatives in the House wants to break the agreement and cut spending below what was agreed to last year. And the House Budget Committee, firmly in the clutches of the teabaggers, seems willing to go along with this. Now, it would never pass the Senate, but this is the chicanery and deception and duplicity and lies and fraud that you find every single time a right-winger opens his or her mouth. You cannot trust them. They make agreements simply to break them. They are liars and they are deceivers. Now, as the Times points out, reneging on the agreement would not only endanger vital programs like Head Start. You show me a right-winger who understands what Head Start is and how vital it is and how important it is. And I'll show you a right-winger who is drunk or stoned or on heroin. That's interesting. Not only would the Republicans reneging on something they signed a year ago, would it endanger vital programs like Head Start, but it would erase what little bit of trust is left in Congress, according to the Times. Now, there is no trust in Congress. None. Zero. So I don't know what they're referring to there. But it would clearly demonstrate that the current Republican insane people who run the House cannot be trusted to live up to its own pledges. That should not come as a shock to the editorial writers of the New York Times, but I will concede the point. We will stipulate that Republicans can be and are always deceptive, lying thugs, especially when they get elected. Now, as the Times points out, when Republicans created the debt ceiling crisis back in August, their main goal was to cut spending, and they got their wish. By threatening a government default, they forced an agreement negotiated by Speaker John Boehner that cut $2.3 trillion from the budget over a decade without a dime in new taxes. Remember that? Cut spending. Well, how are we going to pay for things we're already committed to? Oh, we'll just let them die. Now, in this cut, the $2.3 trillion from the budget over a decade was more than $800 billion cut from non-defense discretionary spending in areas like, and this is your typical Republican, education, cut it.
Housing assistance? Cut it. Transportation? Cut it. Public health? Cut it. Veterans benefits? Oh, hell yes, cut it. Why do people associated with the military, past or present, even consider voting Republican? I don't get you people. I just don't understand you. I don't understand the people who vote against their own economic self-interest by voting Republican. But people who have gone into the military, what is it about Republicans that make you support the party that when you get out of the military is so willing, no, eager to cut your throats? What is wrong with you people? He asked plaintively. All right, here comes the part where it gets numbery, and don't let your eyes glaze over. We'll get Prairie 2 to explain all this later. But for fiscal year 2013, the agreement that was agreed to by Democrats and Republicans and signed into law, the agreement set a discretionary spending level of $1.047 trillion. Now, according to the Times and according to anybody with a sense God gave a sack of doorknobs, that's too low. But that level at least let appropriators in both the House and the Senate know how much they had to spend. And House Republicans crowed about it at the time. Woohoo! Yeah! Hello! Hello! Paul Ryan, the freak who's the chairman of the House Budget Committee, said, "The Budget Control Act represents a victory for those committed to controlling government spending and growing our economy." That last part, of course, is a lie. It doesn't grow the economy whatsoever, cutting this kind of spending. It retards growth in the economy. But the Republicans know, the right-wingers know, that their constituents are dumber than dog droppings, so they can say stuff like that. So what he's crowing about was the cut in education spending, the cut in housing assistance to people who now desperately need it, the cut in mass transportation. Oh, let's pollute the air even more. Right, Ryan? The cut in public health. Oh, who needs public health? There's always the threat of a flu epidemic or something hanging over our heads. What difference does it make? It'll call the herd. Right, Ryan? And, of course, veterans benefits. Paul Ryan has never met a veteran that he doesn't despise. Of course, he will hold one up and shine it up and show it off, this veteran, and whether it's man or woman, say, "Look, I support veterans. Look, it's Veterans Day. Look, here, let me dust the dust off your shoulder epaulets there. Veteran, are you a veteran? Oh, hello, hello. Oh, God, I love you. Today, the other 364 days, I think you're a chump." So now members of the Republican Study Committee, Republican Study Committee? The most right-wing members of the House, that's what they call themselves, the Republican Study Committee. Study? Don't get sidetracked, Mike. The most right-wing members of the House want to bring the 2013 level down to $931 billion from $1.047 trillion. An unimaginable, the Times speculates, 11% cut in a single year. House officials say Mr. Ryan's committee is unlikely to cut that much, but could bring 2013 spending down by several billion. About $19 billion. Now, that $19 billion cut on top of the ones already agreed to could have terrible consequences. Assuming it was applied evenly to all non-defense programs, it could mean that, here you go, 50,000 children would lose access to Head Start. So what, right, Republicans? 20,000 families would lose child care slots. So what, right, Republicans? And 10,000 teachers and their aides would lose their jobs. So what? Right, Republicans? And some of you people wonder why I hate these people.
doing talk radio right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
Yes, it is 21 past the hour. So, the House Republicans, under the authority of this Republican Study Group, which are the real neo-fascists that now infest our government, are trying to renege on the deal that they made with the Democrats. And the Democrats, of course, were insane to have gone along with this last year. But they went along anyway because Democrats are cowards and they're terrified of the idiocy and the stupidity, and I don't blame them, of these Republicans. But there's a way to handle that. And the way you handle any bully is you stand up to the bully, get in his face, and when he says the wrong thing, you make him stop. It's very simple. So anyway, the Senate is sticking to the agreed-upon spending limit, and therefore the House, the decision by these Republican scum to try to renege on their deal could lead to a clash between the House and the Senate again that raises the prospect of another government shutdown. So look for that to happen within the next couple of months. The Republicans know that they're going to have their asses handed to them in this next election. They are going to lose the House. They're going to further lose the Senate. They are not going to get the presidency, and they are going to get wiped out where it concerns governorships or state house elections that are up for grabs. Watch it happen. So they're going to do this. They're going to try to shut down the government, cause confusion. This is an old communist trick. I mean the Stalinist trick. Not communist, but the Stalinist trick. This is the way you disturb, disrupt, and destroy a society. You do what the Republicans are trying to do. And this is why they're a threat to the Republic. This is why they should not have any power whatsoever. The only reason they have power is because the system that is still creaking along in this country gives them the power. And they lie and deceive and cheat and steal and rig everything to get the power. But bottom line, you still have millions of people in this country who vote Republican, who vote to cut their own throats. Look, you millionaires and billionaires, you want a buddy in government? Vote for Obama. Are you out of your minds? Vote Democrat. The Democrats have done nothing but make you richer. Unless you're a complete out-and-out thief and a fraud like the executives in the banking industry. But the rest of you, how have you lost anything under Obama? No, you rich people, you've gained. So why are you horsing around with these filthy Republicans? Why? What's the point? Is it the woman issue? Are you so afraid of women, you little twits, that you're going to vote Republican because, oh, well, they'll stomp down on the women? Are you kidding? Really? You men are less of men than I even imagined. And you women who vote Republican, you have had your brains captured and turned into oatmeal. Senator Patty Murray, who led the Democrats on the budget so-called super committee last year, said the following: if House Republicans walk away from the agreement their own speaker made less than a year ago, then they will show that a deal with them isn't worth the paper it's printed on. Senator Murray, please. I mean, either you were naive enough to believe that when you signed off on the agreement, that you could trust these thugs, or you think the American people were naive enough to believe it. One of the two. But Senator Murray, you can't now make a statement like, water, I have discovered, ladies and gentlemen, water is wet. Oh, my God. Really? Senator Murray, you have worked with these thugs. You've seen them in action. You are inside the political system that is now so filthy and so corrupt as to render this country ungovernable, and you're going to show surprise? If the Republicans renege, they've already reneged. The Times completes their critique of all this by saying, if Mr. Boehner is to retain any credibility as a leader of the House and a responsible lawmaker, oh, please, he needs to extinguish this rebellion and make it clear that a deal is a deal. Well, the Times editorial board, or whoever wrote this, is showing the same kind of faux naivete that Senator Murray is. You people on the editorial board of the Times, you really are not shocked or surprised, are you? You really don't think that John Boehner has any credibility. You really don't think he's a leader. And dear God, you don't think he's a responsible lawmaker, do you? So why write this drivel?
Oh, he just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Yeah, 25 before the hour, and this hour is being sponsored by Stephen from Burbank. Thank you, Stephen, very much. All 3 hours tonight, Stephen's message this hour, consider energy as a commodity. Right, now, wait, let me back up. You're going to have to clear your mind for this one. I want you to sit quietly. Eyes closed. Shh. Okay. Consider energy as a commodity. Consider human beings as energy. Consider surplus goods as becoming so cheap, it becomes less than free. Birth control becomes a shut-off valve to the entitlement. Human rights for a bag of tomatoes? You're kidding. Stephen, I like that. Stephen and Burbank, our sponsor this hour, in addition to the other two. Thanks, Stephen, very much. Sanchez called in last night. I was talking about the Occupy LA and the foreclosure mess that is not just in Los Angeles. It is very strong here, very strong in Arizona, very strong, well, across the country, actually. Except in the enclaves where the super wealthy live. They don't have a problem with foreclosure. You know, they never have. They never will. Well, it turns out that managers of major banks, the managers, not you know, we've been told that it's been the low level, the functionaries, the robo signers, the people hired for minimum wage. Here, sign this. We've been told they're the ones that are responsible for all the fraudulent foreclosures, right? Well, a wide ranging review by federal investigators, also reported by the Times, now shows that managers at the major banks ignored all these errors. They knew about them in the foreclosure process. And in some cases, they instructed their employees to lie, cheat, and steal, to adopt make-believe titles and push documents through the system despite objections from people along the way who said, sir, this is not right. Shut up and foreclose. But this is not right. Shut up and foreclose. Now, we know that the banks have largely focused the blame for mistakes on
you know, the minimum wage employees or the low level employees, the people only making 40 grand a year working at a bank, only 40 grand a year working at a bank. And the managers and the bank boards and the CEOs attributed many of the problems to the surge in the volume of foreclosures after the housing market collapsed in 2008. You know, as though, it's not our fault. We set up this horrendous mess. We lied, cheated, and stolen. I like stealed. We lied, cheated, and stealed from you. And then when everything collapsed, this construct that we put together of fraud and deception, then we blame you for that, too. We take no responsibility. It's low-level employees. I'm sorry. There was a big surge of foreclosures. Not our fault. Not your fault? Not your fault. These are all Republicans. These are all right-wingers. Right? You know they are. There's not a Democrat in the mess. Not a single one. These are all right-wingers. The report by federal investigators now concludes that managers were aware of the problems and did nothing to correct them. Well, why should they? They make money on lying and cheating and committing fraud to get the mortgage into the hands of someone who can't afford that sort of mortgage. And then they make a profit and fees when it's time to foreclose. Why should the managers correct the fraud and deceit? They are paid to commit fraud and be deceptive. That's what the banking industry is about. And especially the managers who run them. Are you kidding me? Come on.
Oh, well, we didn't know it was going to happen like this.
Okay. According to the Times, the Times calls them shortcuts. I call them acts of theft, fraud, and deception. They were directed by managers, according to the report, in some cases. The report, by the way, is by the Inspector General of the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And the examination is among the most extensive to date of the bank's foreclosure practices. And the banks, as you know, signed off on a $25 billion settlement. And that settlement was filed in federal court yesterday. $25 billion. Now, the banks are responsible for the loss of $3,000 or $4,000 billion. $3,000 or $4,000 billion. That would be $3 or $4 trillion. In assets that were lost due to the fraud of this banking industry, and it may be higher than that. So when you have a loss, a theft of $3,000 or $4,000 billion, and then you settle for $25 billion, well, are you sitting there doing the math? $25 billion. Well, we're the banking industry. We're going to give you $25 billion to settle all this nonsense that was caused by low-level, employees and people who couldn't afford the mortgages. And, we tried to tell them that they couldn't afford the mortgages, but they insisted. And you know, Acorn made us make these loans, and the Obama administration made us make these loans.
But you made these loans before the Obama administration came to power.
I don't want to hear anything nonsense like that. David Montoya, who's the Inspector General of the Housing Department, said in a statement, quote, "I believe the reports we just released will leave the reader asking one question. How could so many people have participated in this misconduct?" The answer, simple greed. End quote. David Montoya, Inspector General of the Housing Department. How could so many people have participated in this misconduct? It's not misconduct. Misconduct, David, I'm sorry. I don't mean to be a creep here. But misconduct is when your child talks out of turn in second grade and gets a note sent home. That's misconduct.
This is massive fraud. This is theft. This is collusion. This should be punished under the RICO Act. This is the action, or these are the actions, of a banking industry out of control because they know they can be. Misconduct?
Sorry, David. No disrespect, sir, but the term just doesn't work for me. As the Times says, rather than focusing on misconduct at outside law firms, loan processors, and other third parties, as some past inquiries did, namely under the Bush administration, the Department of Housing and Urban Development's investigation here takes aim at internal bank processes and the chain of command. It doesn't name the supervisors or indicate how many knew of the problem, however. No, of course not. Of course not. Now, if somebody is accused of stealing from your local convenience store and it shows up on the nightly news or in your local paper, it'll say John Smith, the alleged thief, was booked in the county jail and released on a $100 bond. But when it's like this, no names are named. And the modifier, alleged, nothing. These are thieves. These are liars. These are people, these banking executives who created and committed the greatest fraud in the history of the banking empire. They goddamn near brought down the global financial system. And it's called misconduct? Misconduct. Okay. At Bank of America, the Times reports, which until late last year was the nation's largest mortgage servicer, two employees testified that they had raised concerns about whether documents were being properly notarized, but managers told them, proceed. Keep your mouth shut. One vice president said documents in her department were checked only for spelling errors and formatting.
Oh, my God.
Not the figures or facts as presented in the case. This is how they double-checked on the people who were supposed to be handling the foreclosures. Fraud, unending, unceasing fraud that will never be sorted out. People are being thrown on the street, truth seeker. They're being foreclosed on, and nobody really knows who owns the mortgage. But because they're just common folk who are now unemployed because of the Bush economy, how are they going to fight back? Who are they going to hire? A lawyer? Are you kidding? A lawyer. We'll be right back. Bank fraud, foreclosure fraud, it's SOP now, standard operating procedure. I want to thank again Stephen from Burbank for tonight's sponsorship all 3 hours and his strangely intriguing message with this third hour. Here it is. Consider energy as a commodity. Consider human beings as energy.
Consider surplus goods as becoming so cheap it becomes less than free. Birth control becomes a shutoff valve to the entitlement. Human rights for a bag of tomatoes? You're kidding. Oh, Stephen, that's deep, man. Thanks, Steve. According to this report put together by the Department of Housing and Urban Development and its Inspector General, David Montoya, let me quote again, quote, Bank of America did not establish active control over its foreclosure process. And as foreclosure cases multiplied, Bank of America's management turned up the pressure on employees to move faster. Faster, pussycat. Kill, kill! Despite management representations to the contrary, the report says, employee performance reviews demonstrated that Bank of America used defined goals and metrics to evaluate performance-based production in its document execution group, end quote. Which means these low-level employees were instructed to file the foreclosure papers on X number of mortgages in Y amount of time, or Z, get their asses fired. It had nothing to do with the merits or non-merits of the case. It had everything to do with greed, fraud, lies, and deception. So, again, I can understand and appreciate David Montoya's, the Inspector General of the Housing Department, his investigation and continuing, and the statement. But I'm left with the same question. This housing collapse began, arguably, 4 years ago. The setup for the collapse began, pick a number, 5 or 6 years prior to that. There was collusion on the parts of the banks. I think that is, how could it not have been collusion? Everybody in the banking, mortgage banking industry, investment banking industry knew what they were doing. I mean, once Bill Clinton signed off on the Republican initiated bill to end the Glass-Steagall Act that separated banking from investment, so-called. Once that happened, then the banking industry and the investment industry became nothing more and nothing less than a huge casino, even more so than it was prior to the end of Glass-Steagall. So the players, the wealthy folks, the one-tenth of 1%, to say they took advantage of the system is to say that ice cream is cold. I mean, they raped and pillaged. They destroyed. So why are they not charged under a RICO, under the RICO Act? Why is there not a massive assault on the banking industry? The only answer you're left with is the fact that the banking industry has, how do we say this, friends in high places. The banking industry has friends in high places that agree to a $25 billion settlement, which might be 1% of how much they stole, 2%, 3%. If they stole $4 to $5 billion, i.e. $4 or $5 trillion in equity and value and net worth from the American public, and they're now asked to settle for $25 billion instead of the $4 or $5 billion that they stole, what do you call that if not having friends in high places? I mean, seriously, what do you call that? Luck? At Wells Fargo, now the nation's largest mortgage servicer and originator, employees told the Inspector General's office that the company's management had assigned them bogus titles, titles like Vice President of Loan Documentation, even though they had no training in document review. Before becoming vice president, one employee worked at a pizza restaurant. Boy, yesterday I was delivering pizzas. Today I'm a bank vice president. Son of a bitch, this is a great country or what? Woohoo!
Wells Fargo Management questioned or quashed an independent study by a manager responsible for overseeing the affidavit process. The study has started to show that the document department was critically understaffed. The report said, quote, the mid-level manager was directed to stop the study and return to the practice of signing affidavits without reading or verifying data. You see how this works? This is called deniability. Just sign it! Don't read it! But what am I signing? Never mind! Do as you're told! You want to remain a bank vice president or you want to go back to delivering pizzas? Is there a third choice? No! Then I'll continue to commit fraud and theft, and I'll continue to lie and deceive and cheat and steal for the glory of the banking industry. I will indeed, for the glory of the banking industry and my paycheck. Thank you, sir. Thank you. May I have another and another? Where do I sign? Right there. Okay. And another? May I have another? Thank you. Another? More. Give me more. I'll sign them until my hand bleeds. More. Thank you. More. Keep them coming. Sign right there. Okay. Thank you. More. Right there. Okay. Thank you. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.